Good morning, everybody. We are starting with our revised agenda. And the first subject on our, this is the Seoul ISB board meeting. And the first item on the agenda is the post-implementation review of IFRS 8. And I give the floor to April Pittman.
We'd like to discuss two topics with you today. In paper 12A, I'll ask you for permission to publish a request for information as part of the investigation phase of the post-implementation review and ask you for comments on the questions proposed. And after that, Anne will share the preliminary findings of her review of the academic literature on the effect of the implementation of IFRS 8 as presented in papers 12B and 12C and answer any questions you have on those findings. So turning to paper 12A, the draft revised due process document, which is currently out for comment, includes public consultation in the form of a request for information as part of the post-implementation review process. At the May meeting, you tentatively agreed the structure of the request for information to be based on the key decisions taken when developing IFRS 8. That is, the use of the management approach in identifying segments, disclosing those items which are regularly reported and reviewed by the chief operating decision maker, and measuring those line items based on the internal reporting method of measurement. Questions are also proposed to identify unexpected costs or implementation issues, to gather information about the disclosures required by IFRS 8, and to gather information about the respondent, about their job, their jurisdiction, and whether they're recent adopters of IFRSs. A post-implementation review is an opportunity to assess the effect of the new requirements on investors, preparers, and auditors. And so the questions are worded, I hope, in a neutral tone and focus on the effect of applying IFRS 8 and on evidence of that effect. And so the questions for you today are, do you grant permission to publish an IFRS, a request for information on IFRS 8? And have you any comments on the content, structure, or style of the questions proposed in paper 12A?
I open the floor.
Yes and no.
First, we begin with a no.
Well, I will explain why I believe it, I'm probably in the minority, but why I would vote no on the first question. Not that the paper isn't fine. I'm not sure what our objective is in these post-implementation reviews. We are going, April just said, the objective is to determine the effect of the new requirements on investors, preparers, and auditors. I don't know what the word exactly effect is, and that's my concern with the five questions we've got. They're very open-ended. When you ask somebody, what is the effect of this standard on you? I felt good, or I didn't feel so. I don't know how they'll answer that. But more importantly, I don't know what we're going to do with the answers. And that's, are we only looking for fatal flaw problems? Are we prepared to reopen the major issues in the standard if people say, well, I don't agree with this, this, and this? So that's why I'm a little worried about where we're, the way we're going. Now, not that the work isn't good, I just don't know the way forward afterward.
That's good. But wouldn't the answer be that everything is possible?
Yeah.
If the answer of investors is this has been an unmitigated disaster, there is a complete loss of comparability, and we'd rather go back to previous standard or an improved standard, I think we would be very hard. It would be very hard for us to do nothing at all, or to just tinker with the standard.
Yeah, I thought before we had this discussion before we launched onto this, and you know, the initial proposal was to keep it very, very narrow and actually not to raise the big question at all. And then we had the discussion and thought that that wasn't a feasible thing to do. But I think we admitted at that stage that we didn't know. And I've been saying this for over a year in public speeches. You know, if people come back, as Hans said, and say the whole thing's, do people really want us to turn it upside down? But we can't, you can't sort of postulate those decisions. I think we've got to ask the questions, get the answers, and then think about the actions. So it would be nice if we had a clear idea of exactly where we're heading before we put this out, but I don't think we do, and I don't think it's possible to have that clear idea.
I would ask, if that's true, and I certainly accept that, I would ask the questions more specifically. Not what is the effect of the new standard on you, but are you, is the information that you're now getting improved over what there was, or are you satisfied with the information you're now getting? Are you satisfied with getting non-GAAP information in the financial statements? That, those kind of specific questions. I'm in the minority. I don't want to prolong this, but that's my issue.
We only started this discussion now, so you don't know if you're in the minority.
That's true. I usually am.
Well, you don't seem to suffer too much. Amaru?
Yes, thanks, Hans. I do understand Paul's concern. I guess when you go to discuss the IFRS paper, it's very much portraying his view on how this should be conducted, because in the paper for IFRS for SMEs, his questions are much more direct, but there's a difference in there. The SMEs paper is working with the SMEs implementation group, so they have a clear experience on implementation issues. So for them, it's easier to spot the problems already after this implementation process. I think the open-ended questions have positive aspects as well. So with open-ended questions, we can explore issues more broadly, let's say. So not directing the response as well. So there's always this cross-cutting issues between or a very direct questions or open questions, and I do prefer the open questions as proposed by the staff. And I just would like to reinforce and maybe ask the staff to complement that this is not the only tool that we are going to use in this process. This is only one of the tools. There are others that the staff is envisaging and is developing already with real examples and with the help of users from various jurisdictions. Maybe if you could just explain the plans for the future that would add to this tool would be helpful for us. But I do support the staff as proposed.
Thank you, Amaro. And yes, I think there are probably perhaps two things I should say on this. One, within the context of the request for information itself, there is more information given in the request for information. So it does give background about what points were raised when the standard was originally developed, what the board's thinking at that time was, messages that we have heard subsequently, examples of pros and cons that we have heard subsequently, so that there's a bit more context as to the range of what the possible issues might be. So the questions themselves are only a part of what goes out in the request for information. But you're right, we are intending to do some wide-ranging workshopping with preparers and regulators and auditors to actually assess what the effect of implementation was in their area and on them. We think that workshopping and interviewing people is a good way to get this information, because it means you can add depth to your understanding of what their issues were, and it gives them a chance to give you evidence and examples of what they found from a factual basis when they try to imply this. And then separately, we're going to approach investors on a less technical basis to see how they find the information is now, whether it is giving them better information or worse information, what they consider to be good aspects, what they consider to be bad aspects of operating segments. And I think those workshops will be done more in the nature of giving them examples gleaned from actual sets of accounts to ask them to identify what facets of that they like and which bits they don't like or which bits could be improved. And as I think you know, we've been speaking to fellow accounting standard setters, both regionally and nationally and other interested bodies, to actually devise outreach plans over the next few months to bring in this sort of information. So this is just one part of the investigation process.
Patricia?
Well, there's no one at this table, I think, that would like to see IFRS 8 redone than me, because I never liked it. But that being said, the one thing I agree with Paul on is that I think that the question should be more towards, are you satisfied with what you have? Because I found in talking to our constituents is that they're never satisfied with it. If you ask them, what do you want? It's going to be something different than they have. And so I'm afraid with the sort of open-ended questions that they will come back with lots and lots of complaints. And so we will be left with no choice but to reopen IFRS 8. And I think if you ask them, are you satisfied with what you have, you might get a more balanced response, because
Would you like a new standard?
Would you like a new standard? They're going to say, yes, I would like a new standard. And I think, you know, I think preparers would like one that requires less, and I think users would like one that requires more. And we probably hit the best balance that we can at the moment. But, you know, so I think asking them if they're satisfied with what they've got at some point in the conversation, you know, actually ask them if they want us to reopen it, or are they satisfied with what they have? Or they just want us to amend it for little problems?
Yeah. And just follow up on that, I think in terms of asking them if they're satisfied, the important thing is to understand why. So, and that, I think, is the advantage of the broader questions and the sort of interviews that April has talked about, is digging down deeper and finding out, well, what is the concern? Why have they got these concerns? So if we're going to ask, are they satisfied or dissatisfied, it's important that we're following up with, well, why is that?
Oh, I don't disagree about that, but at some point in each interview and workshop, I think you have to either start and close by asking the question, are you satisfied with the current standard?
Well, no, that is also a very general question to which the answer is always going to be no, or very often going to be no. The real question would be, do you want to go through the pains of...
Right. You're right. That is the real question.
Or do you think this is just enough?
Right. I think that's the real question. I think that has to be asked. Yeah.
And, I mean, you may remember, I think it was in the March meeting, we looked at a series of quite detailed questions, points which had been raised with us from a number of different areas, which we thought that we would use as a sort of an aid memoir when we're having these discussions, to find out if the points weren't raised, to specifically ask, are you not raising this because you've forgotten it, or because, you know, it didn't apply to you. And those questions have the sort of the level of depth that Paul was referring to in his points.
John?
I'm probably more with Paul and Patricia. Just a couple of reactions. It seems to me that we spent a lot of time in getting this one out. We were aware of both sides. We had to make a decision. And we did this with others. The goodwill thing, as I recall, was another one. It was contentious. And what David said for many years is, we got to move on. We're aware there's two different views here. After the standard's out, if it's fatally flawed, we'll know that. You'll tell us, and we'll do something about it. We commit to do a review. I read this to say, let's go back to ground one, square one, and rethink the whole thing. And to me, this is creating a huge amount of work onto our agenda every time we add a standard. So what's missing from my perspective is, the question I want to see is,
and you said, are you satisfied? I would say, if you're not satisfied, is there something that's fatally wrong? What is it, and what would you suggest we do to correct it? But right now, we're helping us identify all these little things. We're going to get the little things anyway, because people do that, they don't like it. But is there something hugely wrong with this standard? What is it, and what would you do to correct it? And I try to get that out there in a way that's what we're looking for. We're not looking for the fact that we could have added a little more disclosure here or there. And, well, it's your agenda, not mine. I wouldn't want to go back and have to redebate all the things that were debated in the past. So I'm a little more with those guys.
John, I mean, I understand that feeling. And again, we did discuss these things in the board before. And it's a terribly difficult decision. I think the post-implementation reviews inherently have got dangers in them. And maybe we can help by asking the questions in a different way. But, you know, the big question on this one is, do you like this method or did you like the old method? And if you like the old method, do you want us to go back to it? Well, and, you know, this is a tryout. We're trying, I think, on this one to work out a methodology for going forward. And unfortunately, we've picked one of the more difficult ones to begin with. But we are where we are.
Well, why don't you ask that question? I read these questions like we're searching for, come on.
No, I can see you
put it right on the table.
So, John, if I follow your advice, I would feel we will face even more difficulties if we want to post-implementation review on stock option standards.
We have committed to do this, and the commitment, as I heard it over many, many years, was we've heard the debates back and forth. We know the different views. We're moving forward with what we think is the best thing to do. After having experience with the standard, if there's something that we missed that was really significant, we'll fix it. So I mean, we've committed to do that. We should do that. But I don't think we should start from the beginning and say, let's go through all of this.
Yes, Paul?
I gave the staff a list of questions. I know mine are too specific, but my very first question that I would ask, in general, as a user of financial statements, do you find segment information useful? A, yes, it's extremely useful as reported under 8 currently. Yes, it's moderately useful, but some changes to 8 could be made to make it more useful as follows. No, it's not very useful. Some significant changes should be made as follows. Something else. You know, I mean, to me, at least, that's a straightforward question. You'd get a straightforward answer.
Can I ask, so if we got back and 60% said yes, change, so are we counting votes now? Or are we interested in what were the concerns were? And the point that April was trying to make as well is that this is just one piece of the puzzle. I must confess I was surprised, John, that you saw this as being a complete reopening, because that's not what it's supposed to be.
I think
the RFI, the request information itself, should set out the context of this. We've made it very clear in our descriptions of these reviews that there is no presumption that we will make a change as a result. But it's also incumbent upon the board, if they do find fundamental issues, to feed that into the agenda process. And the thing is, you're going to have a look, you know, do we do this ahead of agriculture, for example, ahead of business combinations under common control? Those are the types of trade-offs we will have to consider eventually if there was enough information to say we do want to open it. But I'm a little worried about it turning into essentially a vote count. If this was a survey and we're counting heads, I think we could have a problem.
Can I just say that I think the reason why we went for structuring it, looking at the key decisions that were made and the basis on which the standard was drafted, you know, the way you identify segments, the way you measure segments, what you disclose, was done so that if we could find that people were dissatisfied with some aspect, we would know exactly which aspect it was and which decision had to be reconsidered, if any, rather than my concern about just saying, are you happy with it? Does it give you better information? Is that I don't think a number of the people replying would actually reply in the depth and in the way that would help us focus on what the issue really was or what decision had been taken in error or needed to be reinvestigated.
Well, I have to say I arrived at a somewhat different conclusion than Paul, Pat, and John. I think there could be some improvement in the precision with which you shape the questions. That might elicit perhaps more of the kind of information that, that Paul, I think, is talking about. For example, question five, I would say, should be worded to say, how has IFRS affected your analysis and use of financial statements? You know, please provide, and to use a phrase that, that Stephen, I think, coined in our preliminary discussions here, please provide evidence, okay, of how it has affected your analysis and use. So I'm fine with casting this wide net because, as Alan said, I don't think it, it puts us in a corner where we have to deal with every single issue that's raised. I'd rather cast the wide net and see all the warts and blemishes and then decide to focus on what we think is the major issues rather than, you know, this rifle shot approach and then that's all I get. So I'm sanguine with where we're going here. I don't disagree that we could perhaps word the questions a little bit more directly. But I think it gets around analysis and use of financial information.
April, were you planning the follow-up, the more deeply drilling interviews that you would like to do? Are you going to do this after you have collected all the evidence from the written procedure?
We're going to do it simultaneously, so that when this is published, if it went for a 120 days comment period, while that was going on, we would be conducting workshops and interviews. And then when we got the results in of the public consultation for the request for information, we'd have at that stage some interviews and the comment letters, and we could decide at that stage if we needed to follow up more in-depth interviews or specific areas to be workshopped.
Okay, so it could be envisioned that after collecting this wide array of comments, which might go all over the place,
that may identify further things.
That we could then do a second round in which we do ask questions more specifically, and where we're also going to ask, okay, you're very unhappy, and we're not surprised because we encounter that all the time, but could you please tell us very specifically if you're so unhappy that you want us to issue a new standard in the period of calm?
I also agree,
there is a possibility of doing both. We might be lucky. Why I was rather sanguine about this approach was we did the same with the agenda consultation, and it worked out fantastically. This is probably different. Here we might just collect grumblings and vague dissatisfaction. But if that doesn't work out well, then we could do what Paul proposes, and which is echoed by Patricia and John. We could do that in a second round if necessary.
But we can ask these questions in a workshop. I mean, we could convene analysts here in London and New York, elsewhere in the world, and ask these pointed questions in workshops. So I don't necessarily think they have to be in the RFI.
That could work out fine as well. It might be necessary to force our constituents to make some choices, which they might not be so happy to do. Also, I think it's very obvious that the academic research is not very conclusive. Leaves a lot of questions open. I suppose you would take them along in the interviews as well.
Yes.
Okay. Doc?
I don't think it's a good idea to ask too much specific question in the first place, and I rather prefer open-end question in this stage, because it really takes time to understand what the aim of the new standard is. Actually, I'm fully involved in the segment information of the US GAAP, which is nearly equivalent. And actually, in my experience, it took more than 5 years to understand the intent of the new standard fully. Because first, when we introduce it, and then it's a new standard, just we need to change it. And then we have to explain it to the preparers. And then we have to explain it to the management. And then finally we have to explain it to the users. And the users do not understand really in the first place because they lose some information. They cannot compare. So then they will complain definitely. Then gradually both preparers and users understanding the intent of the new standard. That is what I experienced. So if we ask some specific question at the moment, so constituents will compare the previous information and the current information, and then they will ask, we are losing some information. There would be a lot of complaining, and it goes to something like a statistics. Now, if we receive such a statistics, then we need to react. But the real question we have to ask is, do you think it will work in the future? So that is something like a comment, whether or not the management or users have a feeling that it will work in near future or 5 years' time or 10 years' time. That is the most important thing if we ask which was better, IS-14 or IFRS-8. So the purpose of the post-implementation review is to scrutinize, is there any unexpected costs or unexpected consequence? So in that particular area, we could ask some specific question, but in the broad sense, do you think it's useful or something? I don't think we should not. I don't think we should ask some specific question.
I think the staff has got it right as it is. If it was the only tool we would use for this PIR, I think I would go along with Paul and ask more targeted questions. But this is only a starting point and among many tools we are going to use. So to have open questions, open-ended questions, seems to me a way to collect more information than asking very targeted questions. So I support going as it is today. I only have 2 points. To Alan's point, I think we should, in the document, have an introduction trying to avoid the risk of creating an expectation gap, because people might misunderstand this exercise, and so they should be warned upfront that we are not committing to redo fully IFRS 8 as a matter of principle. The second point is your new question one, April, you have added a question which says at the bottom of page 3, if you work in a non-IFRS environment, your input is still useful to us. It's a bit vague. What does it mean to work in a non-IFRS environment? Do we intend to obtain information from people who have never used IFRS 8? And if so, why? Or what's the value to us of people who never use IFRS 8? Segment information? No.
We do have a sort of a gap in expectations out there. We have got some jurisdictions who don't use IFRS 8 at the moment, but who would like to comment on IFRS 8. So they're looking at it in absolute terms. We also have recent adopters who are comparing IFRS 8 with their own legacy local gap. So we put in this so that if they do respond, we will be able to assess their things. But I agree with you. If we're looking
at a bit vague, I think we should try to be more specific. Otherwise, we will get all sorts of irrelevant information. Mm-hmm. We must understand clearly why they comment on this thing, if they are not currently using IFRS 8. That would be a good reason for us to comment, and that must be made clear. So I'm a bit worried about the way it is worded. Otherwise, good.
Jan?
I say yes, and I say no to the questions. I think I've heard these arguments before. I thought we discussed this, rather thoroughly discussed it, and I also thought we said that this is the first time we do this, so let's do it in an open way, and let's learn from this, and let's later on when we do it for the 10th or the 20th or the 30th time, then we have refined the process a little bit. So I'm very surprised that we're really discussing this, because I thought this was exactly what we asked staff to do. So thank you for a good job.
And what is no?
On the second question.
Second question. Oh, okay.
The first was yes, publish. Comments, no.
Stephen.
April, you mentioned about the interviews that you're going to do. Is this document going to be the basis for those interviews? You're going to do something different?
We're going to do something different, and that will be, I think, workshopping, I think, with sort of preparers, auditors. I think one of the best ways to do that is to actually have people turn up and do a little presentation of what the effect was on them, what they found difficult to apply, either because the guidance wasn't clear or because internally they didn't know how to assess it, what worked well and what they found easy to apply, whether they had unexpected costs. That should pick up the implementation issues, the practical issues of applying it, what the unexpected costs were at the time, and then an overall conclusion as to whether or not at the end of the day they felt it helped them communicate better with investors and understand figures better. And then for investors, I think, you know, as I said, I think there you're looking in detail at existing disclosure and existing operating segment notes and discussing with people how they think that information feeds in. Because quite often investors find that the note in the financial statements is one of the least important insights they have to operating segments and understanding that.
In the document, you specifically mentioned preparers and investors. I don't understand why you would do something different for the interviews than you've got in the document, because doing it differently, you're going to find it very difficult to integrate the information. It seems to me that we're going to get limited responses from users to this document.
Yep.
We'll have CFA and EFAS and one or two others. I think the preparer responses will also be fairly limited because this is so, you know, it's even before we've thought about making an agenda decision, and we know that interest starts off pretty low at the discussion paper phase and then ramps up the further we go. So I think the preparer responses will largely be, the letters will largely be from people that have some significant problem and want to complain. So I don't think that's going to be particularly representative. I think the big opportunity to get a representative input is through the interviews. And I think the interview should be based around this document, or this document should be based around what you intend to do for the interviews. So I don't see the reason for the difference.
Well, I think the structure of them is the same, because they look at it in terms of how you identify operating segments is one step. Is that better done looking at the management perspective or another perspective? So the sort of the structure of what you're looking at is same, but how you look at it is different, or how you investigate it, I think, is different.
Okay, I don't think it should be. I think it should be the same. My other point is that the questions here refer to preparers and users. And as I've said, I'm not sure we're going to get an enormous amount of response in comment letter forms to this. It seems to me that we're more likely to get responses from national standard setters, representative bodies, accounting institutes, the auditors. And the questions aren't directed at them. So what do they do?
Well, I think the auditors, I think, will think of how those questions affected their clients and what evidence they have for that. And I think with national standard setters, they are already and have already been discussing locally with a range of their constituents as to what the effects of these are.
Do you expect a national standard setter to respond based upon the structure of this document or in yet another different form?
I would expect them to respond based on the structure of this document so that they would send us information that they have about the identification of operating segments and information that they have about the basis of measuring what was disclosed and information about what line items are disclosed.
I feel that this document should be a way of encouraging others to provide evidence, input, information. And I think we'll get much more of that from national standard setters and others than we will directly from users and preparers. I'd like to encourage the Korean standard setter to interview top 30 Korean companies and go and visit 20 Korean investors based upon some sort of template where the structure is going to be comparable with the information we're going to get from Australia, submit that information, and we'll get a far richer data set from that than we ever will from the three Korean companies that will respond and the zero Korean investors that will respond via letters.
And I mean, if you think back to the original schedule that we did of the issues for investigation, where we had the very detailed questions about each of these topics, they were structured about what was the effect of the way you identify operating segments, and then within that, questions about that nature. I mean, I think looking at the key basis and the key steps that you use to apply IFRS 8 has got to be the way that we look and question people about the effect of it. Because I think this is the natural sort of structure, you know, how do you identify the segments? How do you measure the segments? What line items do you disclose?
I'm not objecting to the questions as such. I'm sure they can be improved and some of Paul's suggestions I like, but I'm not objecting to the structure of this and the way it's done. I'm just concerned about what we're going to end up with at the end of this and making sure that we integrate this document going asking preparers and users with what we ask national standard setters in various institutes to do and what we're going to achieve through interviews, either us doing interviews or us subcontracting interviews, which I hope we will do to other people to do on our behalf.
And in the discussions that we've had with other standard setters, I think we've agreed that we'll publish the a document that we had of the issues for investigation and the questions which we posed to people, which was circulated a couple of times to the national standard setters, and we've had all of their comments on that. And I think that will form the sort of, I was going to say checklist, a sort of an aid memoir when you're conducting interviews, so you know what sort of topics you need to sort of winkle out or address.
April, I fully agree with what Steve proposed, you know, I think he focused on how can we collect information. I think, you know, ask for help from national standard setters on this is quite, you know, useful way. And also, I will feel we can get, you know, much more colorful, you know, views from over the world. And of course, if we want to do so, it maybe should be a structured ways. And we can gradually refine the approach by discussing with the national standard setters, you know, on the process. And I fully agree with Steve's proposal. And we are not able to handle everything by ourselves.
And we have had very substantial discussions with the national standard setters and others.
Daryl?
Sort of a question, sort of a statement. A lot of what's come up so far seems to me to be about context. The context that we're doing it in, what we're trying to achieve with it, how this information will be used, what the other things are that we're doing, what we're trying to get out of this from the process, perhaps whether we think we're going to be making changes to the standard, and et cetera. I'm presuming there's another part to this document, which is the introduction, which will give an awful lot of that context, and we'll put the context, put these questions into some kind of context.
Yeah, there is quite a lot in the document itself, which gives the background to the introduction of IFRS 8, the original idea of convergence with US GAAP, what the different characteristics of IS 14 and FAS 131 were, why the board chose the management perspective and the basis of conclusion, what comment letters we received and what the comments were and how they were addressed.
Perhaps more what I'm talking about is what we're trying to achieve with the post-implementation review. It's about making sure people start to answer, the right people are trying to answer the question, and they're thinking about the question correctly, the questions correctly.
And I mean, what we've got in the document at the moment is sort of extracts from the due process document on the post-implementation review. We haven't actually, to be fair, given that much context, because I think, to some extent, we're still not really very clear where we are going with the post-implementation.
I think in some ways that's going to drive, that's the entry point to this document, that's the entry point to these questions, and depending on how correct we get that, I think we'll talk a lot about the type of answers we then get from people.
Paul, I have a question unrelated to what we've been talking about up to now. Our standard, as April just said, is identical to the U.S. standard issued a few years later. It just so happens that we're embarking on our post-implementation review at the same time as FASB are embarking on their post-implementation review of their standard. Are there questions that they will be asking similar to these, different from these? Do we have an update? When we first talked about this a few months ago, we didn't have much knowledge of what FASB were doing. Do we have more now?
We do have more knowledge of what the FASB are doing. We do find that there are a number of dissimilarities between our two processes.
Dissimilarities.
And in fact, I think there are fewer similarities than you might think, because their objective is different, the methodology is different, it's done externally, it is confidential, the FASB do not know what questions were asked or who responded or what they said.
The trustees do it.
It's done on behalf of the trustees by third parties and others.
The detailed information is not available to us or to the FASB.
And so it is a completely different process. We are in conversation with the staff because I think the important takeaways for us is that to the extent they have different comments from different conclusions, we need to understand why that difference would be. And it could be quite valid because of our different perspectives.
But I thought their whole process, it was about due process. It wasn't about the standard itself and what it said and what the effect was. It was the process of issuing the standard.
It is completely different from our process, which is why we can in no way be...
So to my mind, we can just totally ignore it. Yeah.
Did it set out to achieve what they said in terms of due process?
Because there's been nothing available for you.
Well, yeah, we can't see it anyway, so what's the point of thinking about it?
And up until now, we don't even know what questions are being asked, so we can't say that we can compare anything because we don't even know what was asked.
Hans has an idea.
Listen, I think...
April, you might want to put mic towards you.
Well, that's a little late.
Yeah, I was going to say.
I think the general sense is that staff can go ahead as planned. I think there were a couple of good suggestions given. I also think we really should take our time here. If you also look at the academic research, it is very clear this is coming very soon. I mean, we are going to do it because we are committed to doing it. But if we need a little bit more time in the process, because first of all, this is our first time, so we don't know if we're taking the right approach, we'll learn. And I think it might be very possible that we do need some sort of a second round to drill down to the questions that have risen during the first, more general round. Perhaps not, perhaps the world is very unified in its response, but let's see. Generally, I think to start with these more open-ended questions and have a parallel process of more deeply drilling interviews is not such a bad way to go. I would also very much encourage the staff to use the results of the academic research. The results of the academic research made it clear to me that we are doing this in a very early stage because it's very inconclusive. Because of the academic research was also done in a very premature stage, so to speak. So let's go ahead this way and see how we can further refine our approach in the process.
Do we need to take a formal vote on question?
I think on these things, no. Should we?
No,
unless somebody exists. I don't see any
objection.
Paul has voices dissatisfaction for plenty. So.
I'm softening.
Okay.
Right, so if we now turn to papers 12B and 12C on the preliminary findings of our review of the available literature and the effect of applying IFRS 8, and I need to point out that the papers include in error references to some informal feedback sent to us by staff at the Australian Accounting Standards Board. This feedback doesn't represent the views of the AASB or its staff and should have remained confidential as informal staff-to-staff comments. We'll be reposting these papers with this feedback reviewed after this meeting. So with that proviso, Antarka will take us through paper 12B. Anne is an academic fellow, just completing a year's sabbatical with us from the University of Western Australia, and this is her first time presenting to the board, so be gentle with her.
First and last time.
I don't know, I might get invited back. I might have something worthwhile to say. Thank you, April. Thank you for the opportunity to be here this morning. I want to talk about paper 12B and 12C. In paper 12B, I've summarised research papers, and the detail of those papers is in 12C. What we can see is that there are about 13 academic studies, but only 3 published. So as Hans says, we're at the beginning of the process, and academic papers can take some time. So these academics have done well to get these papers out, but it does mean that they are early drafts, and their conclusions and results may change. We have also some additional reports from bodies such as ESMA, SFAS, KPMG report. I've listed them separately because they don't fall within academic reports. I do have a couple in there that are translations, and it isn't fair if it's a translated report to put it within the academic studies, as we can't evaluate them in quite the same way. So we do have something to comment on, and the main thing we get from the academic papers are descriptive findings about the impact of IFRS 8. So we can see things like most firms that have been studied have not changed the number of their segments, and if they have changed, the numbers increased. We can see that on average, most companies have not changed the number of line items in their segment disclosure, but if they have, the number has gone down, and we can actually identify the couple of areas that are no longer there because companies tell us they're not reported to the CODM. We know that there are a small number of early adopters of the standard. We know that there are fewer single-segment entities. We know there are a lot of non-GAAP measures used. And we also know that these results hold across countries. Although we have only one major cross-country study, we have several studies in various countries, and those results are largely consistent between countries. We have mixed results about things we're interested in, such as whether there's a loss in geographical information. There's debate about the quality of the reconciliations that firms provide between the segment and the overall results. And there's also some debate about whether the segment information is now more consistent with the information in management commentary and in presentations. So they are things that we may find out more about as time goes on, certainly. There are many things... Oh, before I go there. We'd like to know more about the impact of the standard in the capital markets, and that's an area that is very badly addressed at the moment. Because there's a small time period and because very few researchers have tried to address questions that could tell us about how the segment information has changed in terms of quality of information for users, preparers, and so forth. What I'm referring to, of course, is the studies that look at value relevance, information asymmetry, analyst information environment, and indeed even trying to assess cost of capital. So those type of studies, there are a few, there are 3 or 4 or 5, but they are basically small sample, single country, early, very small data sets. So we can't draw a lot of conclusions from them. They certainly are not negative. They're not coming back and sounding an alarm for us and telling us that there is a problem. However, equally, I can't tell you that we're not so sure, is the no result no impact of the new standard or just no impact as yet because the data is incomplete for the researchers to work with. So finally, I'd just like to say that we did list in paragraph 82 of 12B the whole list of what we don't know, because there are at the front of the paper a list of things that we know that the board was interested in when this standard was released. And so there are a lot of things we don't know. Paragraph 82, for example, we don't know about the extent to which IFRS 8 allows users to see through management's eyes. Equally, we don't have studies yet that have looked at the better prediction of cash flows, which was something that was hoped for. We don't know if IFRS 8 makes management's communication better, investors can understand it better. We don't know that. We don't know if IFRS 8 information highlights risks that management thinks is important, and we know little about the time involved or the cost incurred under IFRS 8. So that's where we are at the moment. In 12B, we raised two questions, and they are, do the board have any questions at this stage on the external research findings to date? And secondly, would they like any further areas to be researched at this time?
And I think it's worth noting that obviously when the board are further into the investigation phase, we will need to do an update of what the academic findings are at that stage to allow the boards to reassess that. So this is a very much an interim initial findings feedback.
We have at the back of the room a group of students and academics. I hope they take good note of all the work which is needed and will make use of this list of suggestions.
Well, I have one thing, and I think it's very interesting to read these, even though preliminary reports, but gave me a number of thoughts. I would be very happy if we could do what I would call a research towards very specifically described groups. And, for example, I think it would be very interesting to understand what are true investors. I say those who finally take this big investment decision. What is the view of the normal analyst sitting in the investment bank doing the very thorough analysis? What is the view of the not so very skilled but very important person who's giving a phone call and say the PE is only 8, buy, it's 6, sell, or whatever they say? I think it would be interesting to understand how the different groups are really seeing these things.
And no, it is very hard to have academic research because of the short history of the implementation. But I think if we won't get information related to our objective or this, you know, review, I will feel more useful to review the papers published in the journal like Journal of Accountancy, Accounting Age. Those are qualitative in nature, mm-hmm. but reflect the views from preparers, users, standard setters, auditors, and or maybe internal documents from big firms. They are practitioners. They, you know, scrutinize the issues and the debate internally, and further the internal reports or reviews from the users like J.P. Morgan or others. They are also, you know,
using our standards and to look at financial reports, I will feel, you know, if we can get, for example, 10 papers from the journal like Journal of Accountancy or Accounting Age, and two reports from each of the big four firms, and several analysis from the JP Morgan, UBS, and others. These are, I will feel, much more useful and meet our objective of this review.
Pat?
You had asked the question whether or not it was any further items for research, and I guess I had one major takeaway from this, and that is where academic studies identify gaps in information. What isn't clear to me is whether or not that's a compliance problem, meaning the standard is quite clear. It calls for this information, but it wasn't provided. And I think this whole investigation into IFRS 8 actually begs a much broader issue that I think our board will have to tackle more broadly, and that is how going forward we not only work with national standard setters, but how we work with IOSCO and securities regulators. I think that's frankly one of the biggest pieces in this puzzle of IFRS adoption, you know, around the globe that has to be eventually addressed. But compliance, in my mind, may be the source of the information gaps as opposed to the clarity of the principle. So that's something I think is worthwhile looking into. The other thing that I think is interesting, in paragraph 65, you know, it's noted how, you know, fewer line items in segment reports have appeared relative to IAS 14. And in my mind, I think this is another example of when something is not required, it's not provided. And I think that's counsel to the board in terms of developing its disclosures in so many other areas. When you develop a principle around disclosure, you run the risk that you're not going to get or elicit you know, a comprehensive pool of information. The last question I guess I had is around interim reporting. Are any of the studies going to deal with the analysis of segment reporting in the context of an interim report, you know, as follow-up, as a specific, you know, area of their focus, or just as part of their overall? I didn't see any discussion around interim reporting.
There are no studies on interim reporting thus far. There are academics who are very interested in the work of the IASB and will respond to comments that the IASB put out about what's of interest. One thing I could do, since we are revising these papers, is specifically add that point into what we don't know, and it may be that generates, that may be one way to generate interest. Academics are not picking up this whole business of interim reporting. At least one study picked up on early adoption and focused in on that, but most people are targeting annual reporting, not interim reporting.
Could we add a bit to Pat's question? In the U.S., there are quite a few studies on interim reporting of segment information, and virtually everyone shows that if you do quarterly segment information, an analyst's ability to forecast earnings, stock prices, etc., is improved over just annual. So we ought to at least take a look at what's being done here for the same issue.
I would say it was the single most important piece of information that I used, the team that I worked with used, when we were analyzing, say, the pharma industry, covered pharma and medical devices, insurance. It was absolutely the most critical piece of information.
What was?
Segment reporting.
On an interim basis.
On an interim basis.
Yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely. Any more comments, Amaru?
Makes sense. I think this is an excellent paper, and I think it's very positive as well in demonstrating to the academic community our commitment and aligned with our strategy review to work more closely with third parties. So I think it's an excellent starting point, and for them to understand how we could use the result of the efforts in researching to help us in frame our discussions within the ISB. So I think this, from this standpoint, is excellent. And then it's a real incentive for them to dedicate time and effort to specific issues that are under scrutiny by the ISB. So it's aligned with our future agenda, for instance, the issues that we already decided to discuss, such as regulated activities, rate regulated activities, bare biological assets, and equity accounting, for instance. So they can see clearly that we can use this. This is one point. And I notice in paper 12C, and this is it's logical. I'm not criticizing this. I notice that the research so far available in our findings, at least, they are concentrating in Europe, some in Australia, New Zealand, and the UK and the US. So, of course, Latin America is missing. Is missing probably because there is only recently applied IFRSs in general. But there's also one limitation that we might have to deal in the future, is the language limitation. So if those papers are not published in these international journals because of there is no interest in the region, or they have no access, the competition to publish is very hard in this international, but we might have excellent pieces of work in that region, in other regions, not only in Latin America, but they are written in their native language. So I think this, in the future, we might have to deal with finding papers that are in language that are not dominated by within the ISB. So I just would like to reassert and stress the importance of this sort of papers and draw the attention of the academic community. We have representatives here today, as Philip mentioned, that we do have a commitment to work with third parties. And of course, but for us to use this, they have to dedicate points to issues that are under our scrutiny.
Philip?
About working with third parties, I have in mind the following point, which applies, I think, as well to IS-14 as to IFRS-8. The history of applying IFRS is still relatively short, since 2005-2006. And over this period of time, the last 6 years, 5 years, the quality of enforcement by national enforcement agencies has probably increased. More efforts have been made, more coordination, more resources, and this has probably had an impact on the way both IS-14 and IFRS-8 were applied with more and more rigor over time. And it makes it difficult to measure.
To regulate it. Well.
And this probably has changed the way the standards have been applied. Probably with, so I would recommend that we or you or whoever does it conduct a series of interviews with the enforcement agencies in the major economies where you have the bigger number of large companies to get their feeling as to whether they believe that just their action has had an impact on the way segment reporting was done. Without regard to which standard, because just the fact that you change from IS-14 to IFRS-8 might lead the enforcement agency to require more segments to be reported based on the new standard. So it's not the standard itself. It goes in conjunction with the enforcement. So I think we could get a lot of information, valid information from the enforcers.
And Philip, perhaps this is also relevant to the auditors, because one of the comments that we did receive that's going to be removed was the difficulty of auditors and so that would be interesting to hear what they had to say to
I tell you, as a former enforcer, I know, yes. And probably others like Wiggle would know that it's a struggle with companies to properly enforce such a standard because it goes against the desire to keep information secret, strategic information.
John, stop calling him.
So it takes time to enforce any standard and to get it embedded. And the change in standard is very often an opportunity for the enforcement agency to put more pressure at the time of change. Sorry for this. It was not the French
enforcement. Well, I think we can round off this. Or Patrick, you have anything? Round off this discussion. Thank you very much for your work. I really appreciated reading it, and indeed academic research is very important for us. We tend to work very micro, and academic researchers can do macro analysis, and we don't have the wherewithal to do so, and we really need that kind of information. So I think this was very useful. I think a couple of issues have been identified that need closer inspection, closer research. So I hope that the staff can take advantage of these suggestions. And thank you very much again.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Shall we take a 5-minute break? Or?
For the last time.